It's Celtics coverage on CLNSradio.com.
A bomb from Thomas.
Dial in right now and share your thoughts toll-free, 347-215-7771.
Welcome in, everybody. Another edition of the Celtics post-game radio program right here. CLNS Radio, CLNSradio.com. We're hanging out for the next hour or so, breaking down what was just an incredible performance by the Boston Celtics at the TD Garden tonight. Your final score from the Garden, Celtics 128, the Orlando Magic 98. And although that's a 30-point spread, the game was not even that close. It's Patrick Gilroy alongside Kelvin Chamberlain, Jared Skelly, taking your phone calls behind the glass on our Movement Watches toll-free phone lines. Again, that phone number, 347-215-7771, 347-215-7771. Let's load them up tonight. You should be excited. Look, the Celtics, unfortunately, didn't gain any ground in the standings tonight. Toronto wins, Cleveland wins, but the Celtics remain just a half game behind Toronto for that coveted number two spot. And I think the story that's getting underplayed here, Calvin, is the fact that the Celtics here we are at the midway point in the season, they remain within a stone's throw of the Cleveland Cavaliers. And to me, when you look at the Celtics' injuries, and we'll get into their most recent injuries in Al Horford and, of course, Avery Bradley missing 9 out of the last 10 games with the hamstring and with the of course with the hamstring for Al Horford and Bradley with Calvin. Excuse me if I'm wrong here, but what's wrong with Avery Bradley? I'm losing the he's in a walking boot. But it's not the quad, and it's escaping me right now. But he's missed 9 out of 10 games. And the Celtics team has overcome injuries all season long. And to be 3.5 games behind Cleveland at this point in the season, I think that that's a testament to Brad Stevens and his ability to keep this team on track.
Yeah, do you think it's a testament to the Celtics or a testament to the Cavs? I guess we can get into that a little bit. It's funny watching this game. The first thought I had, you're right, they won by 30. It wasn't even that close, but it was the fact that this is the perfect game to be doing a post game show with Patrick Gilroy because.
What are you saying, Calvin?
Well, let's face it, it's not your favorite thing to sit down and break down what happened in the game. And, you know, with this game, it's not really that interesting to talk about what the Celtics did specifically to win this game. Sure, we can talk about the fact that they started Jaylen Brown and he played well, and we can talk about the fact that Isaiah didn't have to do too much tonight, and we can talk about the fact that they played a team that can't shoot at all, and Evan Fournier didn't play, so they really couldn't shoot. But really, what you want to talk about is big picture stuff, and I think tonight's the night for that, considering.
Well, and again, you know, maybe that's a testament to who I am and the way that I do radio. But I feel like there's a lot of coverage when it comes to if you want to break down a game or get into the numbers. We can do that, but it's my goal, whether it's here on ESPN, on WEEI, whatever outlet I happen to be working for on any given night. And today, by the way, I worked for 4 of them. I did mornings. And Herald Radio. Then I went over to EEI, recorded a podcast. ESPN, I did our high school game of the week. And then I did a call-in on WEEI with Pete Shepard. And now I'm doing this. And it's always my goal to do the most captivating, entertaining radio that I can. Because, again, if you want statistics and if you want to break down a game and get into the plus-minus and you know, who's doing – there's a time and a place for all of that. And I think that on CLNS Radio, we do a great job, whether it's the coaches program that we have or if it's somebody like Larry H. Russell really getting into the meat of things. He can do that. But when you're doing a post-game show and you've got 82 of these shows to do, it doesn't make for very, very compelling radio. What I like to do is find a storyline, find something juicier to talk about to engage the people. Because again, if you want a game recap, go check out the Boston Herald in the morning. It's not interesting to me, although it can be done very well. I just find it a little bit boring.
Hey man, no need to be defensive. I wasn't taking shots here. I get what you're saying. I can go either way. You know me. I just adjust my co-host. My only point was this particular game is not the game that I have any interest in breaking down. I mean, there are things about it that I found interesting. I find it sort of interesting in a psychological sense. that Marcus Smart was moved to the bench in favor of Jaylen Brown, which I guess happened in the previous game as well.
Yep.
But ever since that little tantrum he threw at the end of the Wizards game, which I also did the post game for, he's sort of been given that bench role in favor of Brown, which I actually like quite a bit. I don't know how you feel about it, but that's definitely something we can talk about, right?
Well, absolutely. And Jaylen Brown tonight, 20 points. He was electric for periods of that game. At one point, if that dunk had gone through that he tried to get through, I think it was in the third quarter, maybe early in the fourth. I mean, that's the type of stuff that leads SportsCenter at the end of the NBA season when they do a top 10 recap of the 10 best dunks of the year. That had a possibility of being on there. And I think Jaylen, good for him. I mean, he decided not to participate in the dunk contest, but then he was left out of the rookie sophomore game. And I don't think that's too fair. And whether he's playing with a chip on his shoulder because of that is yet to be seen. But he goes out there tonight and once again shows that when he's given the minutes, he shows that he belongs out there on an NBA court. Again, we all knew that this guy's body was ready. We knew that mentally he was also a step ahead of most of his peers out there. He's just a very intelligent basketball player, very well-spoken. And one of the things that Danny Ainge told everybody that would listen post-draft through Halloween was that this kid is going to learn quickly and adapt quickly to the NBA game because of his intelligence. When you can couple that intelligence with the fact that he already had an NBA-ready body, you start to see some production from this guy. Now, I never thought that he could potentially be a starter, even if it is a fill-in starter's role for a good team in his rookie year. I didn't think he was there yet. He didn't show enough in his collegiate career to show me that he could fit in on an NBA level almost right away. But not only have we seen him fit in, Calvin, we've seen him get better and not get better in the traditional sense of the word. Generally, when you see rookies get better, it's because, especially if they're a top 10 pick, they're playing for a terrible team. So they're getting extended run game in and game out. And what's been so impressive about Jaylen is that, sure, he's getting his 8 to 12 minutes a night in general after that prolonged period of time of being benched about 2 months ago. But he can count on 8 to 12 minutes. But when he's called upon to play extended minutes like he was tonight, going for just over 30 minutes, he's performing, and he's no longer losing on the defensive end the way that he was the first 6-8 weeks of the season. He's really caught on to the defensive schemes of the Celtics. He's switching like an NBA veteran on defense. His man-to-man defense has always been pretty impressive because of the athlete that he is. I find it very impressive when guys are able to step up when they're called upon, let alone a guy like Jaylen, who it shows you how hard he must be working in practice and in their 5-on-5 scrimmages and working with his coaches and working with his teammates. Because, again, he doesn't have the luxury that other rookies have of extended run night in and night out. So when he's called upon, the guy delivered tonight in a big spot. The Celtics down 2/5 of their starting lineup. I don't care that the Orlando Magic don't have as much talent as the Celtics. The Celtics have struggled all season long when they've been down one rotation player, let alone two. They needed somebody else to step up tonight, and Jaylen Brown, really, he answered the bell.
Yeah, Patrick, it's funny because I've been arguing lately that I didn't like the way that Brad Stevens was using his minutes in terms of not the amount of minutes he played, but who he was on the floor with. It seemed like it was a lot of, you know, pairing him with Rozier, and even a little bit more so now that James Young is back, they were playing the three of them together. And I didn't like that as a move because I feel like, you know, Brown's biggest weakness right now is a little bit of lack of discipline, particularly defensively. You're right, he is a good man defender, but in team defense schemes, he sort of seems to get lost sometimes. And I've been saying, why don't you give this kid minutes with the starters? Why don't you give this kid minutes with guys who are going to be, you know, major part of a playoff rotation? You don't want to play those three guys together in the playoffs. Why not prepare him now for a role and have him have a, you know, specific defined role that's going to matter in the playoffs? That's what I loved about him starting tonight, playing with guys that, you know, yeah, he played with a little bit earlier in the season when he was getting minutes, but since he's been benched, it's sort of been, you know, second unit bench mob type, you know, all the minutes with Olenek and whatnot. And I like the fact that, you know, he's getting minutes with guys like Crowder. I like the fact that they went big. You rarely see that with the Celtics. I know Horford didn't play tonight, but, you know, relatively for this team, big. If anything, Amir Johnson played a sort of – he seemed to be more of a traditional center without Horford in the game. So I enjoyed it on that level. But all that being said, Patrick, and as well as he played tonight, and I thought he looked fantastic, later on I'll be making an argument for why I think Jaylen Brown should be the guy the Celtics move.
That is a professional radio tease right there from Calvin Chamberlain. I love it. It is the Celtics post-game show. It is CLNS Radio, clnsradio.com. It's Patrick Gilroy, Calvin Chamberlain, Jared Scally taking your phone calls behind the glass on our movement watches, toll-free phone lines, and, of course, our opening segment, as always, is powered by our good friends over at Blue Apron, whose sole mission it is to make incredible home cooking accessible to everybody. Blue Apron achieves this goal by supporting a more sustainable food system. They set the highest standards for ingredients, and they build a community of home chefs. Did you guys know that cooking together can build strong family bonds? Research shows that Blue Apron families cook nearly three times together. Now for less than just $10 per meal, Blue Apron delivers seasonal recipes along with pre-proportioned ingredients to make delicious home-cooked meals for everybody. What you want to do is check out this week's menu, and you'll get your first three meals for free with free shipping, absolutely nothing to lose. All you need to do, head on over to blueapron.com/CLNS. You guys will love how good it feels and how good it tastes to create incredible home-cooked meals with Blue Apron. So don't wait. One more time, it's blueapron.com/CLNS. Blue Apron is a better way to cook. It's tough to get excited, Calvin Chamberlain, when you beat a team like Orlando. But I think the way that the Celtics did it, and really the way that they played with a throttle down in the first half, specifically the first quarter, really taking it to Orlando, getting the crowd involved early, knowing that they were down two-fifths of their starting lineup, to me that showed a level of maturity that we hadn't seen from this team up until the last couple of, I'd say 4 to 5 weeks, when they really turned a corner. You saw this Celtics team for the longest time play down to the level of their competition and take teams that weren't playoff caliber teams for granted. And I'm not saying that that won't happen again this year. As a matter of fact, I'd bet money that it will. But for this Celtics team to know that they're coming into tonight's game shorthanded, and not just shorthanded, but shorthanded their fringe all-star big man and their fringe all-star shooting guard, who's the most dynamic two-way player on the team, by the way, all the excuses were there for the Celtics to go out there and give a lackluster type of effort. And instead of using those built-in excuses, they went out there and they played with a sense of purpose that you generally don't see against a team like the Orlando Magic.
I definitely agree. And to me, like we said earlier, it wasn't necessarily the offense, because I think they've been playing pretty well offensively. It was the defensive fire. Again, the fact that they didn't have Horford or Bradley in this game, usually, and I've been discussing this in a couple of other post-game shows, but it's interesting to me how much of a puzzle this defense really is, in which if a single piece is missing, it generally seems to completely fall apart. If you look at how bad their defensive rating has been without Bradley, and earlier in the season, how bad their defensive rating was without Crowder. And it just seems like if one of their main defensive pieces, whoever it may be, one of the three or four guys, I mean, maybe you don't include Smart in there, but, you know, Horford, Crowder, Bradley, one of those guys is out, and their defense is terrible. Tonight, two of their guys were out. Yeah, they were playing a bad offensive team, a really bad offensive team, but their defense was still quite impressive to me.
Hey, look, we can continue to break this down because there are elements of tonight's game that are worth talking about. And what I think the most important element was the fact that the Celtics not only blew this team out, they extended the lead in the third quarter, which allowed Brad Stevens to put his starters on the bench. And when you look at the starters' minutes tonight, the Celtics did themselves some real favors going into tomorrow night's game, which is going to be a much more difficult game on the road, second night, back-to-back, against a much better team in the Milwaukee Bucks. But when you look at this team, Jay Crowder, 26 minutes, Jrebko, 27 minutes, Amir, just 21 minutes, Jaylen, 30 minutes, but so what? He's 20 years old. He could go all night. Isaiah Thomas, this is the key one right here, just 24 minutes. Zeller, by the way, you know, he comes out of nowhere, gives the Celtics 10 points, and this is what Tyler Zeller did last year too. You know, break glass in case of emergency, and this guy always comes ready to at least contribute on the offensive end. He gives the Celtics 20 quality minutes. Marcus Smart, 23 minutes. Kelly Olynyk, a big game, and he has really turned a corner the last 3 or 4 weeks. He's clearly healthy. He's got his confidence. He went 7 for 7 from the field tonight, including some very impressive dunks. Just looks more aggressive out there. 16 points in just 17 minutes. Terry Rozier, had a couple of nice plays, gives you 6 points in just 20 minutes. Gerald Green, if there was a sort of a negative aspect to today's game, Gerald did get himself 14 minutes, only 2 points, only the real Celtic that didn't take advantage of the minutes that were given to him. Even James Young got into the action and got 5 points in 8 minutes. So again, you know, you look for things in a game like this. Maybe you look for Gerald Green to come out and spark you with a quick 8 to 10 points, if only because you know this is the NBA, Calvin. You've seen enough games over the years. Generally, when shots are falling with the ease that they were falling with tonight for the Celtics, you know that this thing is going to come back to the median sooner rather than later. And tomorrow night, it could get ugly offensively, if only because the averages tell you you can't keep this pace up.
Well, I think a big reason why the offense was so successful in tonight's game is that they were moving the ball more. I've been sort of critical of their lack of ball handling outside Isaiah. Isaiah didn't look particularly like he was interested in being a scorer tonight, but I think that wasn't his decision so much as he sort of got swept up in the infectious nature of the passing. I mean, Marcus Smart, who is by no means somebody with amazing court vision, had 11 assists tonight. He looked like a point guard. To the point that what's his face? Not Grandy, the other guy with the funny voice. What's his name? Now I'm like a jerk now.
John Wallach. Yeah, John Wallach. Yes.
No. The Homer Celtics announcer guy, who the Hall of Famer, who's like super Homer. Yeah, whoever that radio.
Tommy Heinsohn.
Tommy Heinsohn, yeah. Even Tommy Heinsohn is like, hey, he's a point guard. I know, I seem like a complete jerk now, but to be fair, I'm not a Celtic.
It's okay, because early in the program, I couldn't get the words out that Avery Bradley had an Achilles injury. I was going to name every other part of the leg, because Achilles wouldn't come out of my mouth for whatever reason. So I get it. It is what it is. But yeah, Tommy Heinsohn is a bit of an institution in and around the city of Boston there, Calvin. But you're right, Tommy does get carried away. And every time, you know, we talk about Tommy Heinsohn, I always have to reference the fact that once upon a time during Greg Steensma's first game as a Celtic, Greg blocked the shot and kept the block inbounds. And Tommy Heinsohn immediately compared that block and the play of Steensma to Bill Russell. And he said, this kid has got all the same skills that Bill Russell had. Most guys can block a shot, but to block a shot and know to keep it inbounds, that's special stuff. And I don't even think Steensma is in the league anymore. And that was just 3 or 4 years ago. It is the Celtics post-game show. It is CLNS Radio, clnsradio.com. Patrick Kilroy over here, Calvin Chamberlain over there. When we come back, Calvin gave us a professional radio tease. Now we're going to pay that tease in just about 3 or 4 minutes. So stay tuned. It's CLNS Radio, clnsradio.com.
The first segment of today's Celtics post-game show is powered by ZipRecruiter. It's the new year, which means a fresh start for your business. And a great year starts with making great hires. But posting your job in one place isn't enough to find quality candidates anymore. If you want to find the perfect hire, you need to post your job on all of the job sites. And now you can with ZipRecruiter. Jumpstart your hiring in 2017. Post your job to 200 plus job sites, including social networks like Facebook and Twitter, all with one single click. Find candidates in any city or industry or nationwide. Just post once and watch your qualified candidates roll into ZipRecruiter's easy-to-use interface. No more juggling emails or calls to your office. Quickly screen candidates, rate them, and hire the right person fast and the first time. Find out today why ZipRecruiter has been used by over 1 million businesses, and you can find out for free because you're a listener of the Celtics postgame show. Post jobs on ZipRecruiter for free by going to ZipRecruiter.com/sportsfan. That's ZipRecruiter.com/sportsfan. One more time to try it for free, go to ZipRecruiter.com/sportsfan.
CLNS Radio's leading online coverage of the Boston Celtics now even more comprehensive than ever. From the Celtics postgame show to the Garden Report to CSL and to Celtics Beat, CLNS Radio's Boston Celtics news feed provides narrated breaking news, game recaps, and news and notes for the NBA's winningest franchise, all provided in real time. Don't have the time to surf the web or search engines and plunge your head into your computer or smartphone to read up on all the latest on the Celtics? No problem. Multitask while listening to CLNS's Celtics news feed. And for the 2016-17 NBA campaign, the Boston Celtics pregame report with myself, Larry H. Russell, will be released on the news feed on game days at 4 p.m. Eastern Time. making it the first pregame report to air anywhere. We will give you a featured interview from someone providing opposing insight, pregame notes, and go on a Celtics draft pick watch, all in just 12 minutes or less. Available on the Boston Celtics newsfeed on iTunes and Stitcher, and the CLNS Radio mobile podcast app.
Hey, this is Nick Gelso, the founder of CLNS Radio, and I just want to take a moment to talk to you about Movement Watches. Movement Watches, if you haven't heard of this company, it started by two broke college kids that wanted to wear stylish watches but couldn't afford them. So what did they do? They started their own company. As you know, CLNS Radio was founded by a bunch of Celtics fans way back in 2009, and from there we started a company that made a career out of it, so we can absolutely relate to the owners of Movement Watches. And let me tell you, I purchased the Chrono Gunmetal watch. This watch is so sleek, black stainless steel, it's light, it's versatile, it's great for dress occasions or even casual affairs. A little bit more about Movement Watches, they start at $95. I purchased the Chrome Gunmetal watch for under $100, and I know with the watch I purchased, you're looking at $400 to $500 in a department store. So give yourself a big discount right in time for the holidays. You can get 15% off today with free shipping, and if you don't like the watch, guess what? You can return it for free. All you have to do is go to movementwatches.com/Celticsbeat. Wait a second, even the name is cool. It's spelled MVMTwatches.com/Celticsbeat. Again, go to MVMTwatches.com/Celticsbeat.
Bang.
CLNS Radio, CLNSradio.com. It is the Celtics post-game radio program right here. It's Patrick Gilroy over here, Calvin Chamberlain over there, Jared Scally behind the glass taking your phone calls on our Movement Watches toll-free phone lines, 347-215-7771, 347-215-7771. It was Geno time at the Garden tonight for only the second time this season. Geno was played on the big screen. Geno was played on the Jumbotron somewhere. Kevin Garnett in Area 21 was smiling this evening as Geno really got that place going with about 2 minutes to go. Your final score, Celtics 128, the Orlando Magic 98. An interesting little tidbit. Second time this season, the Celtics have beaten the Orlando Magic by exactly 30 points. The first time the Celtics beat Orlando by 30 was the first game in a four-game stretch where Isaiah Thomas was out. And the Celtics went 1-3 in that stretch. But if you remember correctly, the Celtics beat Orlando by 30 in that first game. And the whole tone and tenor around Boston Sports Radio, which I'm proud to be a part of, but sometimes it's also horribly embarrassing and horrifying when I listen to these guys that are so much better off sticking to the Patriots and Red Sox try and talk Celtics. They went on and on and on for a good 48-hour stretch saying the Celtics may in fact be better off without Isaiah Thomas because of how well they moved the ball that night. Well, the Celtics proceeded to lose the next three games, and then Isaiah Thomas proceeded to go off with historic numbers. Speaking of his historic numbers, today marks 30 consecutive games for Isaiah Thomas where he goes over 20 points, tying Kevin McHale's Celtic record. And if it weren't for that one game this season where he had just an awful 18-point output, it would be every single game that he's played in. So take the injury games away. Every game he's played in, sans one, this guy's given you a minimum of 20 points. And it's not an overreaction anymore to say that this guy deserves to be in the MVP race. Other news from tonight's game, Jaylen Brown gets his second consecutive start, scores 20 points. That's all you can ask for from the kid. Marcus Smart comes in, leads the Celtics in plus minus. He's a plus 36, gives the Celtics 11 assists tonight. And finally, the Celtics creep back over to 10 games over 500 on the season. It's a nice number, a nice mark to have for this team that really struggled out of the gate. They weren't living up to expectations. The injury bug really hit this team hard to start the season, and it continues to hit them hard as we round through the halfway point in the season. Again, Al Horford out tonight, probable for tomorrow, but to me that doesn't mean anything given the way the Celtics play with their injury reports. And of course, Avery Bradley continues to be resting with that Achilles injury, something the Celtics very smartly don't want to mess around with. I think we learned last year in the playoffs just how vital, just how important a healthy Avery Bradley is to the Celtics, both on the offensive end and the defensive end. But before we went to break, we were really extolling the game and praising the game of Jaylen Brown. Jaylen really came to play tonight, second consecutive start. He rewards Brad Stevens by giving him a 20-point outburst tonight. Really some big boy plays in the game, not just the electric dunks, not just the high-flying athleticism that we know he can do, but he's really developed a nice little mid-range jumper. He's got the ability to hit a mid-range fadeaway. He's starting to be able to extend to three in general. I'm not saying tonight, but in general, his three-point stroke has gotten better. You've seen improvement in every facet of the game, and I think that's even more impressive for a guy that doesn't get the typical run that your lottery pick gets, because this is not your typical situation, Calvin. You got a guy here that third pick in the draft coming into a team that's going to win 50 games. You just don't see that often. So I think that makes it even more impressive for what Jaylen Brown is doing here. But you sound like you're not sold on Jaylen, or is it that you want to cash in while the trade value is still high?
Yeah, it has almost nothing to do with Jaylen Brown. First of all, I have to ask before I start. Did you come back in with so many stats and information that made you feel bad? I'm just curious.
Yeah, a little bit.
You really went hard on the stats. Yeah, coming back from the bank.
I did it just for you, man.
Yeah. Okay. Fair enough. So I want to start this. I'm gonna go back right here. I want to start this conversation with Cleveland. Patrick, what I want to know from you is, do you think Cleveland is vulnerable? Because I feel like Cleveland every year in January, right, where they lose some games.
Yeah, they're not vulnerable.
You know, LeBron James does infighting, and you know he talks about how they need to get better. And then by the time the playoffs come around, they're fine, and it was not that big of a deal. You feel like they're not vulnerable. I kind of feel like they're vulnerable, and it has nothing to do with this losing streak. I think they also have a lot of injured players, but I look at what's going on with them, and unlike last season, unlike you know the last couple of seasons, LeBron leads the NBA in minutes. Okay, number one in minutes. He's having to do more with this particular team, and I sort of think his defense is slipping.
Calvin, I get what you're saying, but don't you think that, and I think you started this out the right way, saying that we've been here before with LeBron and with Cleveland. And not only that,
yeah.
I mean, I look back to the big three era here with the Celtics. What was it, 2010? The Celtics go to game 7 of the NBA Finals, but I believe it was post-All-Star break through the last game of the regular season. They were a 500 team. I mean, there was plenty of infighting here that just didn't get reported on, but you better believe that season was the beginning of the end of the Rondo-Ray Allen relationship. The Celtics just did a better job keeping it in-house as opposed to what Cleveland is doing, you know, working this thing through the media. But I don't think they're vulnerable, and I won't believe they're vulnerable till I see them not have the ability to flip that switch come playoff time. Let's not forget, last year, everybody, it was a hands-down favorite. The Golden State, not only was Golden State going to win, they were going to win that thing going away. People had them picked six games at worst. And then what Cleveland was able to do coming back from that deficit really, to me, lifted Cleveland into another stratosphere and lifted LeBron into another stratosphere. But it's a very interesting point. The fact that he's leading that team in minutes is a staggering number, especially considering what Kevin Love is doing for that team this year.
Yeah, this is not – it's not a reflection on LeBron or saying that LeBron's done. But, I mean, every team looks – every team of this caliber looks invulnerable until it isn't, right? I mean, as a Lakers fan, I can reflect back on what happened with my own team. You know, they started – they looked a little weak, and then when it came to playoff time, they still performed. And then there was a year where they were the third seed, and they just got upset. And I feel like – that's going to happen with this Cavaliers team. One day they're not going to be able to turn the switch on, and if they're not there now, they're close. They're a year or two away max. If it's not already, if they're not taking in the East already, I feel like they're a year or two away. But let's say that they are a year or two away. The other point that I have in relation to this, before I even get to Jaylen Brown, is the fact that Isaiah is doing what he's doing. I feel like the organization. The fans, I mean more the organization, they owe it to Isaiah Thomas to, you know, put as competitive a team as possible out there to try to strike while the iron's hot with this guy. You think Isaiah Thomas is going to be this good in 4 years?
Probably not.
Is what he is.
Let me ask you this. Because I have an idea of where you're going with this, and I surprisingly may agree with this idea if I think it is what it is. Are you essentially saying cash in this chip in Jaylen Brown and bring in a veteran player that may be able to help this team right away? And if that veteran player is a Carmelo Anthony, then so be it.
That is what I'm saying. What I'm really saying is, I mean, maybe not necessarily Carmelo, although I do have some Carmelo ideas. If you want to discuss, we can get to that in a few minutes. But I'm not even saying specifically who, because I know Celtics fans, and really, no NBA fan wants to embrace Carmelo Anthony. I get it. I'm not even talking about him specifically, although certainly him. But there are other, you know, we talked about Millsap also previously, who, by the way, made the All-Star team and Horford didn't, but that's neither here nor there at this point. But the point that I'm making is, look, I think the other alternative for a guy to move is Marcus Smart, right? And a lot of Celtics fans have sort of soured somewhat on Marcus Smart, and he's a little bit older than Jaylen Brown, so you sort of feel like he's a complete player and he is what he is. But the reason I would move Jaylen Brown before I moved Marcus Smart, forget about for who, because I don't want to get caught up in that element right now. We can talk about this in a few minutes. But the reason why you move Jaylen Brown instead of Marcus Smart is because, again, I think this team is ready with one or two more acquisitions, maybe even one, to compete with the Cavaliers right now. And Marcus Smart for this season is inarguably, and even next season, is inarguably going to be a more valuable piece on a playoff team than Jaylen Brown is. By the time Jaylen Brown is ready to be that guy, I feel like the core of this roster is going to be a little older and not quite ready to compete. I just don't think that his timing as a player matches up with the rest of the guys on this roster.
But again, this all goes to Danny Ainge. This goes to Danny Ainge because, again, you're right. You're 1,000% spot on, and I can't deny that. However, you keep on talking about maybe a player or two away, or move or two away of competing with Cleveland right now. Are you truly putting yourself in a championship discussion? And I think that that's what Danny Ainge needs to assess, because the Celtics have been down this road before, trading a promising young player and getting back Rodney Rogers and Tony Delk to help a damn good team get a little bit better and push them through an additional round of the playoffs. But looking back, was that the right thing to do for the organization? Probably not. I don't think you would make that trade again. But, you know, in the short term, it looked good. Rodney Rogers was exactly what this team needed to extend to three and give the Celtics a legitimate three-point shooting threat. And Tony Delk, he was electric that year that he came here in Boston, and the following year. He played damn good basketball. But, again, you have to ask yourself, if you're trading a Jaylen Brown or you're trading a Marcus Smart, these are guys that – look, I think that Jaylen's ceiling – is a larger ceiling than Marcus Smart, but Marcus Smart can help this team win games in the immediate future, where Jaylen Brown, for the most part, it's going to be a few years away. So I get that point, which is why I come back to Carmelo Anthony. And there's the Bleed Green group, Nick Sesento, he'll be on the show tonight. God love him. God love that group. These guys, nobody bleeds green more than that group, and I give them all the credit in the world. And I think at one point they ran a little poll, and I was trying to count on my drive into work. It was like 104 comments, and 103 of them literally said no. And look, is Carmelo Anthony a perfect player? Nope. Is he still the great player that he was a few years ago? No, he's lost a step. But this is the type of situation that NBA general managers wait for, because it's truly a buy low situation. And where Carmelo a year ago probably would have cost you at minimum a Brooklyn pick, Jay Crowder, and a young talented player, be it a Marcus Smart type player. Now, because it looks like Phil Jackson is just so done with him and exhausted all his options on building his team around Carmelo Anthony, and truly looks like he wants to build that team around Kristaps Porzingis, this is becoming more of a salary dump situation, where it's not going to cost you a Brooklyn pick, and it may not even cost you a Jaylen Brown or a Marcus Smart. It may cost you a pick or two of your own, or maybe the Clippers pick the Celtics have coming up in 2019, or the future Mavericks pick, and then contracts to make the money work. So this is where your Amir Johnson at $12 million a year comes into play, and Tyler Zeller at $8 million a year come into play, because those contracts come off the books. So that's all Phil Jackson's looking for. He wants to go into the offseason free of that Carmelo Anthony money that's on the books for the next 3 years. And that may be ultimately all that Phil Jackson is looking to do here, because Carmelo's stock has dropped, and the fact that everybody knows that he's available drops that stock even further. And the Celtics are in a great position to absorb that salary. And the biggest argument against that is the fact that the Celtics won't have that money to spend in free agency this offseason. But I'll tell you right now, Carmelo Anthony is at least on par with a Gordon Hayward, who is your best possible option as a free agent. The other thing is, when you sign a Gordon Hayward, you're going to sign him to a minimum of a five-year deal, where there's only 3 years left on Melo's deal, so the commitment is less. And let's not forget the fact, yes, the Celtics were able to go out there and acquire Al Horford in free agency. And whether that changed the tone and tenor of the Celtics' success in free agency is yet to be seen. But odds are, and history tells us, the Celtics generally strike out on big-time free agents, which is why Danny Ainge had to acquire Kevin Garnett and Ray Allen through trade. So again, this may be the perfect storm, where you don't have to give up your A-list prospects. You don't have to get a guy, hope for a guy in free agency and go into the offseason with your fingers crossed. And you're right. Maybe this Cleveland team is a little bit vulnerable this year, but I think if you add a Carmelo Anthony for this year and next year, you at least put yourself in that conversation, and then you can look at additional short-term fixes to fix your big man problem. Then, if you get a Carmelo Anthony, suddenly a Tyson Chandler at 34 years old or an Andrew Bogut who's injury-prone, they may look like something that's a little bit better, because you're only asking them to be right and be healthy for 3 or 4 months in hopes that this team makes an extended playoff run.
Yeah, and there are other guys out there who aren't necessarily as broken down. If you want to pick somebody younger, you can try to get Nurkic from Denver, for example. He's on the market. There are guys out there who...
Oh, the center from Orlando. We heard it tonight. Frankly, broke the story tonight. The Celtics have talked trade with the Orlando Magic. But again, the only downside... Yeah, exactly. The only downside to bringing Melo in is the fact that he is locked up for another 3 years, and it is going to kill the Celtics' ability to have that flexibility cap-wise to go out there with their bag of cash in the offseason. But when you look realistically at the potential free agent targets, look, on paper, is Kevin Durant going to be a free agent again? He sure is. Does anybody think that he's really going to entertain other offers and leave Golden State? No. It's a different situation this year than it was last year. So I think that you bring up a good point.
And the value of Carmelo, like, it is lower than it ever was. You're right. You're going to get more in Melo back. I think that Brad Stevens will figure out a way to use him in this offense. I mean, whatever you want to say about Carmelo being a selfish player, you don't want him in this offense. He's a ball hog. All of those statements can also be applied to Isaiah Thomas, particularly before he arrived in Boston, and look what they did with him. I don't think it's necessarily one-to-one, like, hey, we don't want Carmelo, he's going to ruin the team. And frankly, I think Carmelo's gotten a little bit of a bad rap in New York, particularly in the last couple of years, because I feel like he has tried to fit in a little bit more, taking fewer shots. I think a lot of why they're looking to dump him now in New York is the fact that he's just not fitting in with Phil Jackson in particular, and not running the type of triangle-based system that he wants to run. But I think that to me, the biggest issue is one. Okay, going back to Jaylen Brown, I think that Jaylen Brown, I like I said, I like him a lot. I don't think that his ceiling is transformative player. I think his ceiling is very good player, maybe even all-star. But I just don't think that ceiling, and the Celtics fans, when they call in, and Nick Sesento might be this guy too, it'll be interesting to see. But I feel like Celtics fans are always like the future, because they have these upcoming Nets picks, and I get it. But the problem is you don't know what those players are going to be yet. There are teams with high draft picks all the time, and those draft picks don't pan out. So to assume that, hey, we need Jaylen Brown around because, this guy is going to be good, the next guy who doesn't exist yet on this team is going to be good, 4 years from now, because even if he's a good rookie, it's going to take, you know, 3 or 4 years for him to even be playoff tested enough to be a valuable weapon when it comes to the playoff. Who knows what Jaylen Brown is at that point? It more importantly, who knows what Al Horford and Isaiah Thomas and Avery Bradley and all these guys that are on this team now, that is a very good team, are with. You're looking, hey, we could be a championship team down the line, but you also could not be a championship team down the line. And well, to try to project it out 7 years and say we need Jaylen Brown for that team, to me seems foolhardy, because you have a team that's close to being there right now, and Jaylen Brown is a dude who has a lot of value, probably more value than Marcus Smart, even though particularly for a team like the Knicks. When Marcus Smart can help your team right now, and Jaylen Brown, really, when it comes to the playoffs, is not going to be quite there yet.
Look, it's
so
an interesting
take. That's
why
it takes the time to move him now.
It's a very interesting take, and we'll see what Danny Ainge winds up doing. And look, Calvin, I think I've said this to you before. I took call after call after call back in 2007 when the Celtics traded Al Jefferson for Kevin Garnett. Celtics fans were not happy with that trade. Celtics fans love their prospects. They love their young players. Tommy Heinsohn, and there's video of this on YouTube, publicly shunned the Celtics for that trade. We all know how it wound up working out, and people have revisionist history, and we all fell in love with the trade because of course, the culture change and everything that KG brought to the Celtics. But ahead of that trade, the weeks leading up to it, post-Ray Allen trade, when you knew another shoe had to drop, and it was assumed that shoe could potentially be Kevin Garnett. Let's not forget, 2 months prior to that, there was a rumored deal that Kevin Garnett shot down coming to the Celtics before Ray Allen got here, saying he wouldn't waive his no-trade clause to come to Boston. KG had been in sort of the Celtics' sights for a few months, giving the fans a large opportunity to call in to my show and other shows in the market and have the quote-unquote experts and pundits give their opinion on the air. I was doing Comcast Sports Tonight with Greg Dickerson and Gary Tangway about a week before Kevin Garnett got here. And again, this clip is available online too. I got into a shouting match with Greg Dickerson because Dickerson absolutely loved Al Jefferson and Ryan Gomes and what the Celtics were doing with their young players. And he wanted nothing to do with a 31-year-old guy that had never won before. So again, it's not just the fans, it's the media as well. And Mike Gorman, God bless his heart, nobody is better at their job than Mike Gorman. Mike Gorman came out and said he wouldn't trade any of the Celtics' top 7 or 8 players for Carmelo Anthony. I just think that's bogus. I think that's short-sighted, and I think it's easy to fall in love with a team like this because they are so wildly entertaining. They are fun to watch. They do have this little engine that could in Isaiah Thomas, and he's a great player and a great story, and he's got an electric smile, and he's endeared himself to the Boston fans, and he did all the right things in the offseason, showing up at every offseason event, being in and around the city, the way that the Patriots and Celtics have connected with one another, and the Patriots are all showing up at Celtics games, and now the Celtics are showing up at Patriots games, and the relationship with LeGarrette Blount, and he's essentially an honorary Celtic, and he's in the locker room. God, before at least 1 or 2 games a week, he's with the Celtics in that locker room. All of it. It's so endearing, and it's such a great story, and it's so easy to fall in love with this team. But this team, as currently constituted, is not going to win you squat. So if you have an opportunity to upgrade the roster without giving up rotation players or the Nets picks, I think it's something you've got to strongly, strongly, strongly consider. Look, it is the Celtics post-game show right here, CLNS Radio, CLNSradio.com. I want to get to our movement watchers, toll-free phone lines at 347-215-7771, 347-215-7771. Of course, those phone lines are brought to you by Movement Watches. Department store watches cost $400 or $500, but our good friends over at Movement Watches have taken the middleman out and passed that savings directly on to you. Movement watches are slick, they are fashionable, and most importantly, they are affordable. They start at just $95. Head on over to movementwatches.com. It's MVMTwatches.com/Celticsbeat. Gets you 15% off your first order with free shipping. Again, it's movementwatches.com/Celticsbeat. Let's head right out to our Movement Watches toll-free phone lines and bring in the one, the only, the opinionated Nick Sesento. Nick, welcome to the program.
Patrick Gilroy, Calvin Chamberlain. Pat, I hear you've been busy on EEI, on Boston Herald Radio, or was it the Boston Herald Radio, wasn't it?
Yeah, Herald Radio this morning. But that was fun because we did 2 hours of political talk and an hour of sports, so it was nice to mix it up a little bit. But yeah, it's been Radio.
Oh, that's my forte. I should have called in.
Next, I'm doing it again next Friday, 1 to 5 in the afternoon. So you can call in then.
Oh yeah, they're not ready for my radical libertarian political views. But that's okay.
You can surprise them. That's all. Come out of left field. It's all good.
Yeah, definitely. I'm just wondering, speaking, you know, getting back to the Celtics, because I'm sure nobody listening wants to hear about, you know, the political talk. Speaking of the Celtics, ESPN and then Nesson parroted or, you know, echoed the ESPN report that the Celtics allegedly told the Knicks they have no interest in Carmelo Anthony. Now, I mean, knowing Danny Ainge,
don't believe a word of it.
Exactly, don't believe a word of it, because Danny Ainge is known for talking down everybody else's assets and talking up his own assets. I mean, Carmelo Anthony, even at how old is he now? I'm not even sure how old
he's 32.
He's 32
yeah,
years
can
old.
Can I throw a question to this, by the way?
Go ahead.
You know the Knicks are talking to the Clippers as well. I think there are three-way trade scenarios that I was looking at that could theoretically net the Celtics J.J. Redick instead. I mean, if they're not interested in Carmelo Anthony, this is a team that definitely could use shooting, right, and ball handling.
Now I think you're getting, and Calvin, I love the idea of three-way trades, but they don't happen all that often, right? So I think more than likely, and especially because – look, Carmelo has been offered up, if you believe the rumors, he's been offered up to his top choice in Cleveland. He's been offered up to the Clippers and the Celtics, who have got the most assets. And none of the teams that Phil Jackson has originally offered him up to have really bit. And I think that when you talk about Nick, you talk about the Celtics publicly denying the report and saying that they have no interest in trading for him. They don't have any interest in trading for him at the asking price that Phil Jackson set last week. This is a process that will go to February 23rd. And if Carmelo gets moved, believe me, it won't be for the price that Phil Jackson asked for today, be it to the Celtics, the Clippers, or the Cleveland Cavaliers.
Patrick, the lead story on ESPN right now is Knicks Clippers looking for third trade partner.
I understand that. Cool. But that's entertainment. That's entertainment. That's Brian Windhorst getting up and doing 40 hits tomorrow. You know, this is Chris Broussard classic. These guys talk about their three-way trades, their four-way trades. We're going to have a nine-team trade.
Yeah,
it never happens.
It makes logical sense in this particular case, because Redick doesn't hold a lot of value to the Knicks, because he's going to be a free agent at the end of this season, and J.J. Redick is a player who's going to go somewhere else if he goes to New York. So why would they want him as one of their primary assets? If they could get a younger guy from the Celtics, again, a smart, or as I've been arguing, a Jaylen Brown, in, you know, the Celtics end up with a guy like J.J. Redick, maybe that is more palatable to Celtics fans than Carmelo, although I have some Carmelo trade ideas too if you want to get into that.
J.J. Redick is, in my opinion, and J.J. Redick is a nice player, but J.J. Redick is a fraction of the player that Carmelo Anthony is. And come playoff time, whether you like Carmelo or not, come playoff time, he's exactly what you need. Somebody that can score the ball on his own when the game slows down in the half court, somebody that can take a game over late in the fourth quarter, whether the offense is broken down or not. It's exactly what the Celtics were lacking last year against Atlanta.
Well, it comes down to fit and price as well, though, right? I mean, you're getting J.J. Redick for less than you're getting Carmelo Anthony, and you could probably get him for you send Amir and, like I said, Marcus Smart. I guess Marcus Smart, if you don't want to give it to Brown, to New York. You take back J.J. Redick, and maybe you take back Paul Pierce's contract, sort of, you know, legacy situation. And
if you're getting Paul Pierce back, throw in a Nets pick. If you're bringing Paul Pierce back, give him a Nets pick. Give him Marcus Smart. Give him Jaylen Brown, because we want to see Paul Pierce, you know, ride out of the wheelchair for 30 games here. And look, I think it's a great story. And again, this fits right in line with your three-team trade, your four-team trade, because it's wildly entertaining. You know, maybe when the Clippers come here on February 10th, the day of the Super Bowl, by the way, and this sets up perfectly for Paul Pierce, who's a huge Patriots fan and a huge Tom Brady fan. And he'll be in town for that, which is just pretty cool. Maybe the Clippers can just leave him here, and he could be that veteran piece that the Celtics need come playoff time. I think it makes a great story.
You're so skeptical. I'm a little hurt by your sensitivity. Nick, will you take my fake trade seriously, please? I need somebody.
I love it.
Calvin – Calvin, I don't even take you seriously, so why would I take not? I'm just messing with you, Calvin. You know I love you, buddy. But one thing I did want to bring up that Calvin mentioned is trading Jaylen Brown over trading Marcus Smart. And I think there's a big difference here, not just in Marcus Smart's able to help you now and Jaylen Brown is not quite a consistent weapon yet, is that Marcus Smart's contract comes up, I believe, at the end of next season.
After that contract is up,
he's gonna garner on the free market as a free agent. He's gonna garner at least $15 million per year.
At minimum, can we all agree he's getting Evan Turner money?
He's going to get Evan Turner money. Yes, he's going to get Evan Turner money. Whereas we have Jaylen Brown for another 3 years at only, what, $4 or $5 million? So, I mean,
he's on a rookie deal.
He's on a rookie deal. So I think that, you know, Jaylen Brown is showing you now his 20-point game now, you know what I mean, and his ability to grow and I think his natural athletic ability. I think there's a greater upside, in my opinion, maybe not to be, you know, the ball distributor, but to be a player in other, you know, ways, to rebound, to be that athletic guy, the guy that can cut to the hoop that the Celtics need, the other guy that can create his own shot off the dribble, that can get to the hoop. And he's going to be here for 3 years on a cheap deal. And I think that's probably more appealing to Danny Ainge, given the fact that we've all agreed here on the show, or you guys have both agreed publicly on the show, that the Cavaliers are not vulnerable. The Cavaliers are probably almost a lock to win the Eastern Conference. They're probably a lock to win the Eastern Conference this year and maybe even next. You need these young guys to be there to step in and start hitting their stride, start hitting, you know, getting into their groove in the next couple of years. When the Cavaliers start to decline, I mean, LeBron James is already whining, saying, I'm old, I need extra help. I don't know how much more help he needs, but apparently he needs help everywhere he goes. He needs more help than Kyrie Irving and Kevin Love. But you want these young guys.
And Kyle Korver, and let's not forget that team is as loaded as they've ever been.
Exactly.
LeBron, and this is what we talked about on Herald Radio today for a good half an hour, because we try to appeal to a mass audience there, not just Celtics fans. But, you know, we talked about LeBron James and the disconnect that fans have with him and why he hasn't been embraced in the way that he wants to be embraced. While he's still a very popular player and probably the best player in the league, hands down, he could win the MVP every single year. Whether you love him or hate him, it doesn't matter. He's that good and that talented, and he could potentially play another 10 years if he decides to eventually move to power forward at full time. Let's not forget, when Magic Johnson came back after 4 years out of the league, he put up 16 points a game as a power forward. LeBron could do exactly the same thing. All that being said, LeBron James publicly calling out his teammates, publicly calling out his front office, what good is that going to do? And look, is he advocating for a playmaker? Sure. Is there any coincidence that, 72 hours after he publicly advocates for a playmaker, Rajon Rondo goes on Instagram and essentially says, look, my Celtics vets were great. You guys and Dwayne Wade and Jimmy Butler, you have no idea what it's like to be a championship-caliber veteran, trying to push his way out of town. And, oh, by the way, there's a need for him in Cleveland. And, oh, by the way, there's a need for him with Doc and the Clippers with their point guard and CP3 out for the next 2 months. So, again,
wow.
there's some moving pieces out here, and there's some great storylines at this point in the NBA season. This is usually leading up to the trade deadline at this point is just when it starts to get juicy. We just made it through sort of the winter doldrums, and the next 2 or 3 weeks leading up to the trade deadline is when things start to get juicy. But usually you're relying on guys like Adrian Wojnarowski and Chris Mannix to give you legitimate rumors, and then guys like me to make shit up and put it online and generate rumors like that. But we're all looking for rumors, right? And now you've got players out there sort of pushing the envelope. LeBron James publicly calling for more help. You've got Rajon Rondo just selling his teammates down the river, which is something you just never see.
Hold on now. I know nobody on CLNS Radio ever likes to defend Rajon Rondo, but I think that Rajon Rondo may have been selling his teammates, may have been selling the superstars out down the river. But what he was doing it in a way that he was defending the young teammates. From Jimmy Butler and Dwayne Wade, selling them down the river. So
absolutely.
He kind of came up. So
but
he
yeah,
was selling
guys,
Jimmy Butler
the,
and Dwayne
Wade. The young
Wade.
Guys are irrelevant. The young guys in Chicago are irrelevant. I think Rondo. Yeah. I think Rondo's a smart guy. If nothing else, he's very intelligent. And I think this was his way of ensuring that he's not going to finish the season with the Chicago Bulls.
Well, I think we should all see. I completely disagree with that take. I think we should all just stop right now and start clapping and give Rondo an ovation, because for the first time in what years that I can remember, Rajon Rondo was right. He was right. There's a reason why Butler and Wade were suspended and Rajon Rondo was not.
That's right.
If anything,
but you, if you put the three of those guys in a room with John Paxson and Fred Hoiberg, and they've got to choose two out of three, what two out of three are they choosing? The guys that are most expensive and the guys that are the better players. Rajon Rondo, you're right. He deserves a round of applause. He was a very well-spoken piece that he put out there. It was right to the point. He delivered the message in the right way. But unfortunately, he averages 7 points and seven assists a game. He's irrelevant.
Right, that's
seven
fine,
assists
but the point is
isn't
he,
irrelevant.
He's not the one who made the statement. Hold on, he's not the one who made the statement. He responded to Wade and Butler calling out teammates in a way that they shouldn't have been calling them out. And that's the point that Rondo made. Hey, make these young guys better. If anything like that reflects, for once, Rondo wasn't the guy who was throwing a tantrum. He was the one being reasonable and being like, hey, guys. And yeah, in the end, maybe that won't endear him to Wade and Butler, but it'll certainly endear him to the coaching staff.
And again, what matters in the NBA? It's not the coaching staff anywhere. It's the players. I'm sorry, but if Danny Ainge was told, look, you can have Boogie Cousins tomorrow, but he refuses to play for Brad Stevens, Danny Ainge would have a real hard decision on his hands, because again, talent always wins out in the NBA. So, you know, coaches, no matter what you think of coaches, I'm not going to say that they're irrelevant, but they're only as good as the talent they have on the court. Doc Rivers was a 500 coach until he got to Boston, until he got the big three.
The argument you're making only applies to transformational talent. Yeah, LeBron can get whoever he wants to come and go. But if Al Horford says, you know what, I just don't really like Jay Crowder, that doesn't necessarily mean that Jay Crowder is going to get traded tomorrow. In fact, more likely Brad Stevens tells him to shut up and get over it. I mean, Jimmy Butler's been on the trade block for months, or basically years. I don't know why I'm saying months, years. He can be traded at any time, and Dwayne Wade is, what, 35? So Rajon Rondo, you're right, is not going to have a long career with the Chicago Bulls, but that's only because Rajon Rondo is not going to have a long career left regardless. But I don't think him speaking up in terms of speaking up for what's right is really going to hurt his career any more than not having any talent just not being able to shoot.
Again, we could do this all night long, but when it comes to Rondo, I think you have to take it as the total picture. We're about 6 weeks away from removed from him being completely benched altogether, and then due to injury coming back and essentially being a second unit guy, and that's not what he signed up for. He's I'm sure fuming on the inside, and he took his opportunity. And by the way, you know, we're praising Rondo, right, for saying all the right things, and God bless him, he did, and I will stand up and applaud him for doing that. However, or also, he's essentially said that these guys in Wade and in Butler shouldn't be publicly calling out their teammates. That's not the way to do it. That's not the way the Celtics veterans did it. And what did Rondo do? What is more public than going on Instagram? He went on Instagram and publicly called out his teammates. So if you don't see the irony there, I can't help you with it.
By the way, I do also find that hilarious, and this will tie back into the Celtics. That he said, like, Kevin Garnett never called anyone out in public, or Ray Allen for them.
Ray Allen wasn't in the picture. Did you notice that there was no mention of Ray Allen, and Ray Allen wasn't in the picture?
I
love that.
You're right.
I love it. Nick Sesento, but we're getting out of here in a few minutes. You got anything else for us, man?
Oh, yeah, I just wanted to bring up a couple of things since we were talking about trades. I know Carmelo Anthony is the hot topic because he is kind of like, you know, the superstar that's on the block out there. I know we'd love to get, you know, Jimmy Butler and Green if we possibly could, although I think the price is probably too high for Danny's asking. We do need a big man. I think that's probably the one thing that I think we can all agree. Somebody that we can put next to Al Horford so Al Horford can stop being scared of playing in the paint. He can go hide out, you know, on the perimeter and do his little perimeter things and get somebody, a real true center, into the lineup next to Al Horford. Sherrod Blakely ran a piece on...
I'm super happy about that contract that Al Horford signed. Go on.
The contract's not bad. It's he's fine. Al Horford is He's a 16 and 7 guy. 16 and 6 guy. That's what he is.
Listen. I'm not ecstatic about the contract, but I understand the reality of it. And that's the price Danny Ainge or anybody in this CBA, in this inflated money environment atmosphere. That's the price it takes to get a, you know, maybe not a top shelf free agent, but a very good free agent to come to Boston. And
to come anywhere. He was going to get that money anywhere.
Yeah, he was going to get that money anywhere. Exactly.
I mean, I don't mean the number. I don't mean the number. I'm just saying you sound excited to have Al Horford on your team.
No, I like Al Horford. I like Al Horford's game. I just think that, you know, he has abilities that he's not necessarily using because he would rather camp out on the perimeter. But anyways,
Blakely. Nick, Kevin Garnett was at his best in Boston when he had Perk next to him, and there's nothing wrong with that.
Exactly.
And if you can find a Perk-like player, a legitimate, intimidating type of center, doesn't have to give you any more than 6 points and 7 rebounds tonight, but somebody that can man the paint a la Kendrick Perkins, then I think you'll see a better version of Al Horford, just like you saw a better version of Kevin Garnett.
Definitely.
But let me ask you this, right? Wait. Let me jump in because – if you remember the first month of Al Horford, when he signed the contract, the first month that he played in Boston, even the first month and a half, everyone was pumped. He was blocking more shots than he ever was. He was patrolling the rim. He was all over the place, weak side, strong side. He was everywhere, okay? Now, in January, he's averaging less than a block per game, not defending the rim anywhere near close to what he was earlier on in the season. And I feel like people aren't – yeah, people are just going, well, he just needs a center next to him. But – if he just needs center next to him, all right, and he's just not that player, then why was he that player earlier in the season? I'm critical of Al Horford because I've always felt like he has a hard time.
You're critical of Al Horford because you're a Laker fan. That's why you're critical of Al Horford.
Yeah, you're right, because the Lakers hate Al Horford. You're right.
The Lakers hate the Celtics. Al Horford, here's the thing. I get frustrated with Al Horford. I absolutely do. But I'll tell you what. Every time I do, I check myself because Al Horford is exactly as advertised. And if you thought that he was going to be anything more than what you're getting now, then that's on you.
Yep.
No, it's on him because at one point he was more than he is now.
You want to go back 4 years? Because that's irrelevant.
No. I'm going back 4 months. I'm going back to the start.
Okay,
of the
so you're going to say you're going to take a 10-year career where you've got numbers and you've actually got ebbs and flows in that 10-year career that give you a pretty damn good snapshot of who he is, where he was, and where he's going. And it's pretty rare that you could do that, but you can do that with Al Horford. And then you're going to take the fact that it's the first month that he was here. He was healthy. We're talking about before the concussion. He came out and he started doing things he had never done before. If anybody thought that that was sustainable for Al Horford, then you're sadly mistaken. It wasn't sustainable. So, yes, did he block a few shots and did he do some things that we hadn't seen him do before? Sure. But if you listen to people in Atlanta, and whether you want to believe this or not, because I'm not sure how much I believe it, but I talked to some people in Atlanta. I listened to Atlanta Sports Radio, and Atlanta claims that their plan A all along was to get Dwight Howard and pair him with Al Horford because they understood and they knew that Al Horford, for him to be at his best, they needed a real center to play alongside Al Horford.
No, your argument is in relation to production, okay? But my argument is related to talent and ability versus production. My criticism of Al Horford has to do with the fact that he has, based upon his skill set, okay, and his capability, he has the capability to be better than he is. But because he has a somewhat lackadaisical attitude, you don't always see it translate on the court. The numbers that he put up in the limited stretch, yeah, he hasn't done that throughout his career, but I would also argue that's a criticism of Al Horford because
he's
lackadaisical? A smart enough player to do it.
Think he's lackadaisical? You think he's an effort guy? Because I have a lot of criticism of Al Horford, but that's not one of them. I don't ever think it's for lack of effort. I think he lacks killer instinct, and I think he lacks that sort of extra gear in the fourth quarter that some of these great players have. I don't think he's got that. But I don't think it's ever for lack of effort.
Wait, how tall is Al Horford? 6'10"?
Yeah.
Yeah. What's his career high in rebounds?
What does it matter?
And then what does it matter? Because he's a power forward center and he doesn't rebound. That's an effort.
But he hasn't rebounded for the past three years. He hasn't rebounded for 4 years.
He's been this guy forever.
Right?
Since he tore the pick four, he's never been the same.
Strong too, right? Is he weak? Is he Kevin Durant?
Don't do this because now there's so much here to and we can do this for the next hour. A, you're not considering the pectoral injury. Whether that's still in his head or not is something that's been discussed by people much smarter than I am. It may or may not be. But that being said, he's never been the same rebounding wise coming back from the pectoral injury. B, if you want to compare his numbers to what they were earlier in his career, well then let's go back. Nobody wants to compare this version of the NBA, even as far back as what the Celtics did with the new Big Three. Everybody tells me, well, it's a different style of basketball now. That was a different league then, and that was only 8 or 9 years ago. Well, Al Horford's been in the league for 10 years. The game has changed. It's moved away from the basket. It's not conducive to him getting the type of rebound and block shot numbers that we'd all like him to get. And do I like the fact that he's become a three-point shooter? No, not at all. I think he was better suited under the basket because I like traditional big men. But I'm naive to think that Al Horford isn't going to move his game to stay relevant in the NBA. And by the way, Rajon Rondo never adapted, and that's why he's going to be out of the league in a year or two, not because a 33 or 34-year-old, what he'll be in a year or two, can't play effectively in the NBA anymore. Freak, Raymond Felton is still in the league collecting a paycheck at 40 years old and fat. As long as you can adapt to what the game is changed and he can shoot the ball, then Raymond Felton continues to get a job. Jameer Nelson will remain on an NBA roster for as long as he can shoot the basketball. Al Horford changed his game and adapted his game so he could prolong his NBA career. And I don't think that's for lack of effort. I think that's because that's what he had to do to stay relevant and stay good.
It doesn't need to be a referendum on Al Horford for us to say the Celtics could use a little bit of help rebound in the basketball.
Absolutely right.
And it doesn't have to be referendum on Al Horford in order for us to say that.
It does.
And
though.
Some of the names. Some of the names.
We
signed a big man.
You signed a tall man. You didn't sign a big man. And by the way, we've talked a lot on CLNS Radio about the possibility of trading for a guy like Brook Lopez. And what does everybody say? Well, he's talented, but he's a traditional big man, and that's not the way the NBA is going. So you can't have it both ways. Do you want a traditional
you
big man?
You can't have it both ways, though, because you want
listen, hold on, hold on, hold on, hold on.
Al Horford needs a center. You've said Al Horford.
No, listen. No, listen, listen, listen. Calvin, 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 even if Al, whatever position you want to put Al Horford, you want to call him a big man, you want to call him a center, you want to call him a power forward, listen, call him whatever you want. The fact remains that teams still need more than one player to rebound the basketball, and that other player can't be a 6'2" shooting guard named Avery Bradley. You still need more than one player that's going to rebound the basketball. It can't all be Al Horford, even given his history, even given his statistics, which he hasn't been more than a 7-rebound-per-game player in 4 years since he injured his pectoral muscles. So getting back to that, we have a report from Sherrod Blakely that Vujicic, who we just played tonight, who's a 14-point, 10-rebound-a-game player, and that's in 28 minutes a game, is on the block. It might be considered by the Boston Celtics as a potential trade target. On top of that, we also have reports that Larry Sanders, who's been out of the league for a couple of years due to, I guess, mental or emotional health issues, he's been kind of depressed about something, is looking at a comeback. He's a 10-and-10 type of guy who also averages something like 2+ blocks a game the last time
he
had a healthy season in the league. So
but you can't count
regardless
on that.
Of what we think
what
about
think,
Al Horford,
you
can't count on that, but he's a cheap prospect. Regardless of what we think about Al Horford, you don't have to criticize Al Horford to say the Boston Celtics could use another player that rebounds. And there are players out there like Nikola Vujicic, like Larry Sanders, Greg Monroe, like I like to talk about a lot, is still out there, and he can man the paint, he can dunk the ball, and he can do pretty much anything in the paint that you want a big man to do in minimal minutes off the bench. There's players all over the place out there that can do that, and they're out there.
None of these guys.
Now, if only the Celtics had given $65 million to Timothy Mozgov, all would be right with the Horford trade. That's all.
I love the your comparison to Lakers scenarios as if I also don't approve. Look, you want to criticize the Lakers? That's fine. We can turn this into a Laker podcast.
I just think it's really hypocritical. I think it's really hypocritical because you're here and
because you think I'm Jeannie Buss. I think it's hypocritical because you all of a sudden want to pick on Al Horford tonight.
You want to pick
on the Lakers. I will go off on the Lakers if that's what you will.
But I think it's hypocritical of you, Calvin, because you want to take and pick a thing with Al Horford. That's fine.
I'm being critical of the Celtics.
You're being critical of the Celtics on their postgame show. All right, where they win by 30 points, and Al Horford was Al Horford's injured tonight. He didn't even play. So I don't know what.
Sorry, I didn't realize we were just talking about the game tonight.
But
I thought we were doing big picture stuff.
Touche.
No. Yeah, yeah. And beyond that, the only reason we got into Al Horford's rebounding is because we were having a conversation about effort, all right? And I was talking about how Horford doesn't always play to the height of what his talent is, and rebounding factors into that, and so does patrolling the rim.
You talk in facts. The way that you speak is in terms of what you believe to be facts, rather than in an opinion based conversation based. Because I think it's very hard for you to judge. I think it's very hard and very dangerous for you to judge an effort level of a player, especially a guy like Al Horford, who, by the way, nobody questions the effort of Al Horford. Nobody questions the intensity of this guy or the professionalism of Al Horford.
I guess I'm the only one then. But then
why is a guy like Al Horford, who puts up, I'm going to say, pretty pedestrian numbers, why is a guy like Al Horford always, at least in the All-Star discussion, why is he always talked about among other NBA players, his peers, as one of the best big men in the league? All right, because there is an ultimate amount of respect for him.
Now you're changing the conversation.
Hold on, can I please finish? There's
okay.
The ultimate respect for a guy like Al Horford from other coaches and his peers. And if he was giving a half-hearted effort, or in your words, a lackadaisical effort, he wouldn't get that respect that he so clearly has from his peers and opposing coaches.
No, you're wrong. You know who got a lot of respect, right? And I'll take this back to the Lakers, so you don't feel like I'm being hypocritical. But was somebody who constantly didn't give as much effort as he was capable of, just constantly throughout his career, was Shaquille O'Neal. Three-time NBA champion with the Lakers. Well, I watched series after series where he would take time plays off, not go 100%. And yeah, there was a physicality element to it. You can't go that hard with people hitting you all the time in his case. But still, he didn't achieve the level of greatness that he, based on his physical gifts, he was capable of. And I don't think that's an unreasonable criticism to make that comment. That doesn't mean he wasn't great.
I'm not saying Al Horford sucks.
I've been
around this league for almost 20 years. And you know what? Forget the fact that I've worked around it. Just being a fan, I've never once, ever once, heard somebody say, whether it's a fan on the radio or somebody who's paid, once heard that take when it comes to Shaquille O'Neal. I've heard it when it comes to Dwight Howard. Dwight Howard is somebody that could have redefined the center position and been as good as anybody. But because of his lack of effort, lack of heart, lack of whatever you want to call it, lack of balls, lack of intestinal fortitude, lack of everything upstairs, he wasted that talent, and he'll go down in history as one of the biggest would-have-been, should-have-been, could-have-been guys that ever played this game. Meanwhile, Shaquille O'Neal redefined the center position and is hands down one of the top three or four ever to play the game, and in some people's worlds, he's number one, and there are some pretty damn good centers that he's up against. So again, I find it really hard to criticize Shaquille O'Neal, especially when he was with the Lakers and at the height of his dominance.
Yeah, here's the problem. What you're doing is you're just looking at raw production, okay? What I'm talking about is raw production versus capability, okay? Shaq physically was probably the most physically dominant player in NBA history. Not even probably, almost certainly. And I don't know. I didn't watch Wilt. I wasn't alive then, so no shots at him. But other than that, the next guy down the list is LeBron, and he certainly wasn't as physically dominant as Shaq was, okay? There's no question about that. But you say you have not heard this argument. I'll email you 20 articles when we get out of here. Maybe you didn't grow up in Los Angeles like I did. Maybe you weren't exposed to Shaq. I can send you a list of quotes where Shaq talks about not having to work hard or try hard. It's a regular season. I got injured on company time. I'll rehab on company time when he could have prepared himself in the off season and then come into camp in shape. I can give you countless examples of times Shaquille O'Neal didn't achieve things that he could have achieved potentially. And yeah, I do feel like it shortened his career, or at least hit the prime of his career, and he didn't win as many titles as he theoretically could have. But now we're getting off track here. But my only point is...
Oh, but I like the track we're on, because this is entertaining radio. So this is fun.
Yeah.
So I like this track. We got off track, and that's fine. But again, I just get real quick to bring it back home. When it comes to Al Horford, I think that fans that were casual Celtics fans, fans that, you know, paid attention come playoff time, would watch the nationally televised games, but not guys like us that, you know, watch every game. And whether you watch every game, Calvin, because you're a fan or because you do it for the radio, whatever your reason is, I know that you pay attention to the team. And I know, Nick, you watch every game that you can. I watch every game that I can. And whether I was paid to do it on the radio or just the fan that got the Celtics logo inked on my arm when I was 17 years old and the Celtics won 20 games in 1997, I'm a fan. I'm a fan first. And I have a hard time looking at a guy like Al Horford and that being one of the criticisms. I can criticize Al Horford for a lot of things, but again, then I look back, every time I do, I look back and I look at his production versus what his production has been the last 3 or 4 years. I know that there were 30 other general managers that if they had the cap space would have signed him to an identical contract to what the Celtics signed him to. And I know that Atlanta was going to pay him more because they could give him one more year and they made that last ditch effort to retain him. And again, if he was somebody that didn't give max effort at least most of the time, I don't think that Atlanta would have held on to him for 10 years and fought so hard at the end to keep him. And I think that Danny Ainge isn't the type of general manager that's going to extend himself max dollars and max years for a guy where the effort is in question. I just don't see it. I don't see effort being the issue. Maybe there's something in his head that says, geez, I can't give max effort on every possession because I know my body. I need to save myself for the fourth quarter. And whether you agree with that or disagree with that, it's a whole other story for another day. Maybe there's a fear in his head that if he does too much or there isn't full trust in his upper body since the pectoral injury, maybe there's some of that, and that's a fair criticism. But as far as effort on the floor goes, I don't think there's plenty of guys in this league that don't give full effort. Al Horford is not on that list.
Wait a second. Let me just create a little thought to maybe help you with it. James Harden is a guy, and maybe you haven't heard this either.
He doesn't give full. James Harden gives no effort, in my opinion. He's not the guy.
James Harden is no. So James Harden is known as a guy who doesn't give a lot of effort, right? And you just said that. So whether or not you think it, he's known as that guy, right? Do you think Danny Ainge for a second would hesitate to pay James Harden if James Harden showed even the slightest bit of interest in Boston?
Because James Harden, like you said earlier, James Harden is a transformative type of player. So he doesn't need to give, whether you agree with it or not.
Right.
He doesn't need to give.
That's the point. That's the summary of the argument. Yes, talent trumps effort.
And Al Horford.
James Harden. Yeah.
Al Horford doesn't have James Harden talent.
Yeah, Hassan Whiteside, also known as a guy who doesn't always give effort. Guess what kind of contract he got? A similar contract to Al Horford. Just because Al Horford got paid doesn't mean that's a reflection of the fact that he always gives 100% effort. Your argument is extremely flawed in this particular case.
I don't think it is. I think that, again, you're speaking in terms of fact, and I don't think you've got any basis for your fact. I think it's an irresponsible way to do radio because, again, who the hell made you the authority? Answer my question, please. I'm willing to have a conversation and listen to your points. You can listen to mine. But you know what's funny here? I'm giving my opinion, Nick's giving his, and you're staying on your point. So in other words, you're not going to be swayed. You have an opinion, you have your point, but you're speaking in terms of fact. Who made you the authority? Because Calvin Flippin Chamberlain doesn't think Al Horford is full effort, that means Al Horford is full effort. Let's shut down the show because Calvin said something.
I don't understand your argument. You make a point, okay? I try to point out the flaw in your logic using other examples that relate to a similar situation, and then you say that I'm sticking with my point. Yeah, because I think my point is right. But I'm not just saying the same thing over and over.
I think it is irresponsible to make the point that you're making because you're talking about you're comparing him to guys like Shaquille O'Neal and James Harden who are otherworldly players compared to Al Horford. And here's the problem that we have. Al Horford got paid like a Shaquille O'Neal or got paid like a James Harden because in this NBA, under this CBA, if you have talent, you are going to get paid max dollars. Period. So that's not Al Horford's fault that he got paid the same way that these guys do.
I'm making an idea. Do you know how an analogy works? I don't need to find a one-to-one player. And I'm not saying Shaq is the same talent level as Al Horford or James Harden is the same talent level as Al Horford. What I'm saying is that a player with talent will get paid on that talent. And I never said Al Horford wasn't a good player or that he didn't have value or even that his value wasn't worth what the Celtics paid him.
No, you didn't. You said he doesn't give max effort, and that's what pissed me off. I think there's a lot of guys.
Right, but you're
there's a reason why you have that opinion. But I tell you what, I don't know if you watch every game, and I don't know how many times you've been in that locker room, and I don't know if you know how his teammates feel about him.
I've never been in the locker room. Does that help?
But I'm telling you that there's guys in this league that are respected, and then there's guys in this league that are respected, and Al Horford is in that upper echelon, and to get that respect from your peers the way that he has it without putting up the raw numbers of a Harden or a Shaquille O'Neal. Without doing that is incredibly hard to do because there's a million guys in this league. The center from Orlando puts up similar numbers to what Al Horford puts up, right? Is he considered in the same breath as Al Horford? No.
There are other reasons why you can get that respect beyond just – hey, giving 100% all the time, okay? I've heard people make this argument about Horford, but more importantly, I'm seeing it on the court. But besides that, Al Horford is, by all accounts, a nice guy. He's a good team leader. He never speaks ill of his teammates. So in the bigger picture scenario, Al Horford is respected around the league for the type of guy that he is. He's a lunch pail type of dude, and I understand that.
Hold on, you just said he's a lunch pail type of dude. You just said he's a lunch pail type of dude. Well,
yeah.
by definition, generally,
that's effort.
Lunch pail type of dudes are effort guys.
No. Okay. Let me.
Yeah,
clarify
yeah.
What
yeah. Those are your words. So I'm gonna. We got to get out of here. But I'm gonna encourage you to do because this is fun and this is what good radio is. And I love stuff like this. But I want you to do something before you and I do a show together again. I want to look at the calendar and see when our next show is because I want you to find me five articles by relevant not bloggers five relevant articles written in the last 4 years. So post pectoral injury. Questioning Al Horford's heart or effort. You find those for me, and we'll continue this discussion the next time you and I do a show together. Nick, I appreciate the call. Sorry for taking over your segment, man. We'll do it again another time.
It was riveting. I appreciate it.
It's the Celtics Post Game Show. It's Patrick Gilroy. It's Calvin Chamberlain. That was a lot of fun. Celtics win tonight. We had to do something different because, look, the Celtics kicked ass tonight. It was a 30-point game against a bad Orlando team. So Calvin pressed all the right buttons. More power to you, Calvin. Final score tonight from the Garden, Celtics 128, Orlando 98. Celtics are back in action tomorrow. This post-game show will be available for on-demand listening by searching for the CLNS Radio Boston Celtics post-game show on iTunes and, of course, on Stitcher, as well as the CLNS Radio mobile podcast app. You want to follow CLNS Radio on social media? It's at CLNS Radio on Twitter. You want to like us on Facebook, facebook.com/CLNSFans. Also, you can find us on ESPN Radio. You find us ESPNNHRadio.com at ESPNNH on Twitter. Today's show was brought to you by our friends at Blue Apron. Head on over to blueapron.com/CLNS for 3 free months of meals and free shipping. Also, our friends at Movement Watches, MVMTWatches.com/Celtics Beat gets you 15% off your first purchase with free shipping as well as Audible. Head on over to audiblepodcast.com/try now for a free 30-day trial of audiobooks. Our music tonight was provided by Joshua Morse. I want to thank all of today's callers, Nick Sacento, you're the man, and everybody that tuned in. For CLNS Radio executive producer Larry H. Russell, by the way, a very special edition of Celtics Beat with Larry H. Russell coming out in just 48 hours Sunday morning. Kevin McHale, Celtic legend Kevin McHale, is going to join Larry H. Russell on the program. Our program director, Justin Poulin, and the founder of the network, the legendary Nick Gelso. For my co-host tonight, the one and only Calvin Chamberlain. Calvin, this is radio. This is not personal. I love you like a brother. That was a lot of fun. And, of course, Jared Scali for taking all your phone calls behind the glass. I'm Patrick Gilroy. We will see everybody back here tomorrow night as the Celtics hit the road to take on the Milwaukee Bucks. Once again, your final score from the Garden, Celtics 128, Orlando 98. We'll catch you guys all tomorrow.